Okay, we are back, I think, for episode 296. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Well, last time we talked, a lot has transpired. Very eventful week. Of course, this weekend, there was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I myself have attended a few of those in my wild and single days. A lot of hospitality rooms you could go into and get a lot of free food. A lot of interns.
Yeah.
Running around. few celebrities. I went to that back in the 90s. I had the pleasure of being introduced to Tom Selleck, James Garner. I met what's her name from the X-Files. Yeah. The actress. I forget her name now. But yeah, so you kind of go to these things. And even then, back in my naive 20s, I always thought it was untoward, the friendly relationship the politicians had with politicians, journalists had with politicians, was all just one big hot tub. And they got together and laughed and partied. And also the role of Hollywood coming in, which, you know, I think someone once observed that politics was Hollywood for ugly people, you know, and the mergers of the two, both are kind of fake. But nevertheless, that occurred this weekend here in Washington, D.C. It's an annual thing. And of course, Joe Biden on Saturday came in and he attacked the news outlets and said that lies are told for profit and power to stir up hatred in the United States. I guess Fox News is the only news channel that's guilty of that. And in Joe Biden's view, speaking to the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner, Biden referred to truth buried by lies. Now, what is he talking about? And an apparent reference to false conspiracy theories that he's still upset about this. Darn it, I was legitimately elected. Don't you believe me? You know, the idea that there was massive voter fraud. He says the cycle of lies and hate has emboldened local jurisdictions to ban books and the rule of law and our rights of freedom to be stripped away. Wow, banned books. I guess, would this be like the sexual explicit books and grooming material in elementary and junior high school libraries and also curricula?
No, I mean, you're talking about Dr. Seuss.
Yes, I know. Of course, not having Penthouse or Screw magazine available for children to peruse in school public libraries is not banning the material, nor is it not distributing literature to school-age children promoting sodomy and self-mutilation. But nevertheless, this is banning books. Now, whether that material should be banned for the wider public is another issue, pornography in general. But of course, if you don't apparently allow kids to read this material and have the ideas of transgenderism and homosexuality and polyandry or whatever perversion they come up with, that's not being promoted in public schools. You're banning books. Of course, as for freedom being stripped away, this from a guy who attempted to coerce hundreds of millions of Americans to take an experimental gene therapy drug that has now proven not only to be ineffective, but also extremely harmful, you know, to the unfortunate guinea pigs who took it. No shame with this guy, huh?
No, there's no shame. He's all in on the propaganda. What can the public do? There are a number of revelations that are kind of working at this very moment. I mean, one of them is the Ukrainian war, mm-hmm. where they had the leaked documents showing that it's all a lie. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything that's being represented in terms of the war is a lie. Ukraine has no weapons to fight back and they're just being slaughtered. And so when you get these generals that come up, you know, and say, hey, we're about to push the Russians back to Moscow, they're lying. So this is good. And then of course the tragic situation with the decline in conceptions and the increase in all causes mortality. Again, it's a revelation, right? So these things are, and then of course the financial situation is also capable of being a strong revelation to the public. Hopefully the independent media will be able to translate these events so that the skepticism that the public has will just be ever increasing. So that when Biden, I don't really know how to characterize his speech. It's not just lying. It's just really dumb propaganda, right? I mean, whoever wrote that must think that the people that he's trying to affect have extremely low IQs and no mental energy at all, right? I mean, because it's just so obvious to go through the thing and just see that it's self-serving and it's inaccurate. But that's just what is the world we live in. We have to bifurcate. You have to let go and not interact with people who can be seduced by something so stupid. And we just have to try to organize among ourselves. And, it was sad, of course, that the one person in the media, in the mainstream media, that I thought is actually interesting to listen to, Tucker Carlson, was fired the same week. So,
Yeah. He was purged. We can talk about that, get more into that. And then also, I learned this week that the Biden Justice Department is suing Tennessee over its ban on so-called gender-affirming surgeries. Wednesday, the Biden administration Department of Justice filed a lawsuit against the state of Tennessee over one of the state's new laws banning the practice, well, basically it's general mutilation surgery for minors. According to Axios, the Tennessee law known as SB1 is set to take effect on July 1st. The Department of Justice is arguing that the law is unconstitutional due to allegedly violating Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. I don't know if that was the intention of the Congress in 1865 when they voted on that amendment, but nevertheless, that's how it's been subsequently interpreted. The law, should it go into effect, declares that a health provider is not allowed to perform or offer to perform such surgeries, which usually serve the purpose of indulging so-called transgender children's belief that they are somehow of the opposite sex. Any healthcare provider that does so would be eligible for a legal action by the minor or their guardians, as well as the state attorney general. Seems to me that should be the case. That should be like a default position, but nevertheless, this has to be passed. Siding with the Department of Justice lawsuit is the U.S. Attorney for the Middle District of Tennessee, Henry Leventis. I wonder what tribe he belongs to. He claimed in a statement that the new law violates the constitutional rights of some of Tennessee's most vulnerable citizens. Left unchallenged, it would prohibit transgender children from receiving health care, and their medical providers and their parents have determined to be medically necessary, Leventis continued. Medically necessary, citation needed there. What's the definition of medically necessary? Jeez. Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark, she's infamous for actually believing in black supremacy. Yeah. Representing the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, claimed that her own statement that access to general mutilation surgeries and other such transgender treatments is a right that everyone should have. Clark also claimed that such treatments are necessary for transgender children, as if that such a category actually exists in reality, who are especially vulnerable to serious risks of depression, anxiety, and suicide. Gee, I wonder why. Even though studies have so overwhelmingly shown that even after undergoing the surgery, the rate of depression and suicide remains virtually the same. So it doesn't achieve anything really, even with that specious claim. Obviously, there's been a backlash from the states and these things, but nevertheless, the Biden administration is claiming that I think under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, 1964 Civil Rights Act, and also the 14th Amendment, fundamental law, that someone has a violation of their rights if doctors, so-called doctors, medical doctors, are prevented from performing genital mutilation surgery on obviously very confused children.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely it's just ludicrous, the idea that the 14th Amendment has something about restricting states from controlling transgender surgery is just, eye rolling. But I actually, there was something, that you raised, I think is very interesting. You're talking about the rights, that this is a right. Well, I would love to see some statistics, and I've tried to find them, can't. Happy if someone would illuminate me on this issue. But I would like to see the percentage of children who go in to the process who are turned away because the professionals determine that this individual really is not a good candidate for the procedure. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know this because I actually know a urologist from the Charleston area. He's retired now, and he had been involved in thousands. I'm not sure that's great, but certainly hundreds of individuals in his career who had considered sex change operations. And as a urologist with the surgical background, he'd be one of the people who were brought into the process just for the physical inspection of the whole thing. But anyway, he said in his entire career with the hundreds of individuals who had gone through that only three actually went to the end of the process and were deemed to, it was appropriate to do a genital restructuring or whatever it was you want to call this. But anyway, it is completely inverted now. And this happened, well, almost overnight, right? That you went from a medical process that had, well, you know, statistics and methodology to now an open door that never shuts. Because what I'm going to bet, Tim, from what I can find out, is that they don't turn anybody down at this point. They have so much intimidation into the medical system that no one who comes in, no matter, I don't care if they're a 10-year-old kid who just happened to say, you know, he wanted to be the opposite sex at some point, you know, and the parents freaked out and started the process, and lo and behold, he ends up and whoever makes the actual final decision. But I don't think they're turning anyone down. I think that it has really gone full satanic at this point, where all of the kids that come in, and any adult, of course, just goes without saying, but I'm betting, it's okay to prove me wrong. Please do if I'm incorrect, but I'm betting that they're not turning anyone down at this point. Anyone who has any child who has the slightest interest in what it's like to be the opposite sex ends up in the process for hormone blocking and eventually for genital transition.
Well, it's very lucrative. That's actually one of the things I took across and exposed on a show was the various children's hospitals in Chicago and San Francisco and in Philadelphia and in Boston, how lucrative it is. North of $40,000 of surgery plus a lifetime of care, pharmaceuticals, drugs you need. And they actually, you know, our rapacious profit-driven medical industrial complex, it will respond to inducements and money that is provided by oligarchs, which we've talked about, primarily Jewish oligarchs, like the Pritzker family, who will fund the research, fund the institutions, the transgender surgery centers, the therapy, you know, all the stuff. As 10 years ago, you could count on your hand the number of centers were around. Now there are hundreds of them. These things have sprung up like mushrooms. Of course, they're not organic like mushrooms. They're financed and paid for. They're very expensive. And part of the legal and intellectual backing, if you want to call it that, for this, it was provided by the Supreme Court in 2020, in Bostock versus Clayton County, Georgia, where they ruled that workplace discrimination against gay and transgender people was a violation of the Civil Rights Act. And again, this expanding goes back to this DOJ lawsuit that we talked about. Again, Article 7 of the Civil Rights Act, where they're claiming that obviously it was going to ban workplace discrimination based on sex. Well, the only problem with that is now they've expanded sexual orientation and sexual identity. Of course, nowhere was that ever contemplated with those who passed the law, but the Supreme Court ruled, 6-3 in reversing the law on that. Or interpreting the law and therefore making that a protected category. There's no mention of the law about this. And of course, if those who passed the law back in 1964 or amended the law since then have been told this was going to cover something as perverse as this, then they wouldn't have voted for it. But nevertheless, the courts have rammed this down everyone's throat. And what they're saying is if any ambiguity, they're providing the widest interpretation, which is absurd. You know, you have to look at what's the purpose of the law. What was the idea, original intent of these laws? But then they've created this. The Supreme Court created this. And this opens up a lot of, when you talk about the funding, because once the Supreme Court declares this to be a right not to be discriminated against based on the fact that you're delusional or you're degenerate, it opens up all types of issues with insurance and who pays for it. And that's the money spigots. And that's part of the funding. Everyone's paying for this in their insurance premiums, courtesy a lot of Obamacare. Wonder why your premiums shot up 3-4 times, because this is covered in many cases, which is ridiculous. The Pentagon, another target of Tucker Carlson's ridicule, is paying for surgeries, you know, in care. That is ridiculous. So this is the type of crazy world we live in. So this is why this is happening. It isn't, again, it isn't because all of a sudden someone decided, you know, we all decided this was a good idea and our, you know, it was sort of like a consciousness raising moment. This is, you know, unjust not to acknowledge these people's indulge these people's delusions. It was rammed down everyone's throat. And now something like the Biden administration is now coming using all the prestige, if there is any, with the federal government and the funding to engage the various states in constant litigation, useless litigation, because obviously the states have a right to ban this procedure if they deem fit, and they're getting this reaction across the union with, you know, more than 20 states are passing explicit laws banning this stuff. So that's where we are.
The onset of the agenda was quick and dramatic, of course. I think in the big picture, what really is going on is that they have polluted our bodies to the extent that healthy biological sexuality is in decline. And they set up the transgender culture to receive all of the damaged people so that there won't be a reaction against the damage, right? The correct response would be if there was, for example, some extraordinary increase in transgender legitimate type humans, would be to look in the causes for it, right? This would be appropriate. There's none of that. I mean, have you heard anything in the media about, well, what might be causing this increase, right?
That's fairly obvious.
Well, of course.
Obvious. It's being promoted at the same time as they're promoting all manner of degeneracy in these things. At the same time,
the culture being set up. But remember, we've lost over half our sperm.
Yeah.
Is that in any way related to this phenomena? Why isn't that being correlated? And then the other data point that I mentioned once before, which is just horrifying, is the extraordinary number of the people doing the actually transition being autistic. I mean, now that is just, I use the term satanic. I guess it's getting kind of being a common expression, but I don't know what else to call that.
In the great toxicity, and that's not just the obviously the nature of our food production system, agriculture system, and the food and drug administration, and also vaccines.
And that's right. And vaccines are obviously part of all this because
That autism awareness, right? Here you see bumper stickers, autism awareness. Okay, I understand that, but why must we be aware of it?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you aware of what's causing it? You're proclaiming it a problem. Now you now have neurodiverse specialists in colleges, universities.
Yeah, but you
so they're normalizing the damage.
Yeah, you can just see the structure of the sofa tree. Can just see that. Well, they hurt us, and then they create a culture that glorifies the damage.
Yeah, they break your legs and give you the crutch and charge you for it.
And they say that humans are just the humans with crutches are a protected class. We're going to fund it. We're going to promote it, and you're just promoting physiological damage. That's what really the sad thing about the transgender culture is that it's really a worshiping of biological damage. I think that there probably are a lot of individuals who are, quasi males, for example. And by that, I mean that they have sperm count so low and testosterone so low that they are, kind of biologically ambivalent. But how'd they get there?
Yeah.
Right. And the response is not to make a culture out of the damaged humans, but it's to go back and fix what the problem is. But this is why these discussions will never, ever, ever be occurring anywhere in the mainstream, because there's no answer. It's just too self, obvious. And then if you look at the thing in terms of statistics, look, you go back to 1950 and try to find the percentage of people who would be curious about sexual transition. The data I have, it's like 0.03 of 1%, right? Now they've had polls of, kind of woke consciousness. So it's not a real poll. It's kind of a push poll. But they're claiming that they have 10% of the population in these certain polls that are giving the response that They question about whether or not they want to transition from their sexuality. Now, I think most of that is just insanity. You know, they're just pushed in this direction by the culture that they succumb to. But I think some of it's probably, I mean, I think I would be shocked if there wasn't there hasn't been a dramatic increase in what can be called legitimately sexually amorphous humans.
Yeah, what you have is a lot of, yeah, there's a social contagion or emergent behavior.
You combine that with the social contagion. Yeah. And then of course, when you have this large fraction of them that are autistic, and Tim, where is the moral sort of center of doctors who will take an autistic child, right? And think that child has the capacity to make a decision about, you know, genital mutilation.
Well, now, from what I understand, there are people who claim to be trans-ableist, and they're purposely, they want to be identify as someone who is handicapped. And there's some cases of them actually wanting to disable themselves, maim themselves, blind themselves. And so, again, the insanity, there's no end to the insanity, which is, that is the whole point of the whole postmodern idea is you create sort of epistemological anarchy. So therefore, those with the power can pretty much determine what truth is. And that's the destruction of objective truth. That's all this postmodern nonsense they've been promoting with, you know, for decades, really, you know, with deconstructionism and critical theory. And
Of course. And then, you know, one last little criticism of the transgender culture. I mean, bear in mind, this is a culture that doesn't have one generation in it. So you think about it as to, well, why would we be promoting this? It cannot reproduce, right? I mean, so what is actually the goal of the transgender movement? Well, isn't it just depopulation? Isn't this just depopulation with a tranny face on it? You know,
so like Tucker Carlson said that the Friday night address at the Heritage Foundation's 50th anniversary, he said any movement that seeks to castrate the next generation is not political. It's evil.
Yeah,
It's evil.
By definition, you're destroying the next generation.
Yeah,
and the next generation of humans, particularly European humans, has really been damaged. Boy, oh boy, have they had at us. The vaccines, and of course the latest, you know, the transvection, is in probably 60% maybe of that generation, and then combine that with glyphosate and et cetera. You know, these poor kids are just, you know, their hormonal and neurologic functions are really, really damaged. So, you know, not to black pill everybody, but, you know, solution is just radical localism. You've got to get out of that system, you know, if you want to be healthy.
Instead of questioning why it's happening, it's just we're urged to celebrate trans visibility and autism awareness.
Yeah, and our history of the great transgender war heroes that have kept us safe, you know, for all these generations. Like
Well, they are the soul of the country.
You
might be right, which is horrifying. Since the country has apparently been possessed, if it's represented by, you know, those in government.
And okay, so here's a paranoid thought, Tim. It's digression, but you know, as I've been mentioning, the situation in the Ukraine is it's a revelation. And one of the real revelations that's occurring is that NATO is a paper tiger. It doesn't really have the capacity to defeat Russia. It doesn't have the industrial base, is not there for munitions type war, you know, with, you know, who can fire the most artillery, you know. So the fact is that in the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of stories coming out of kind of the head generals of different countries, one in Germany, one in Belgium, and one in Poland. And they said, you know, there's a problem. We can't really help Ukraine anymore because, well, we're out of ammo. You know, we're just out of ammo. We don't have anywhere. We have very little for ourselves. The German situation, they said they're down to in a really active, what I would call a munitions, you know, not a nuclear war, but an exchange that is based on, you know, artillery, et cetera, you know, got two days worth of ammo. Well, you know, you have to wonder, it sure must be tempting for Russia to think, well, you know, why don't we just go all the way to Paris? Why are we wasting our time here? Because when you look at the, you know, this just destructive way that they have, you know, damaged all of the actual capacities of the Western nations to defend themselves. And then you look at our children, you know, this next generation. I mean, where would we even get soldiers from? I mentioned this once before that, you know, when I look at TikTok or, you know, just go to various social events, I'm not seeing people that are very few that are healthy enough to really think that they could, you know, be a soldier. You know, there's a real small fraction of our population. So then you combine that with no munitions. Well, I just had this thought, like, gee, you know, oh man, it's just, if you're Putin and you're sitting there, you know, and you're just fed up with NATO, man, oh man, it must be tempting. Medvedev, the Russian president, called Europe arthritic. He said, you know, so they're getting pretty cocky, you know, about they're no more, you know, like they're trying to give lip service to the idea of, you know, that we're negotiating with these great powers. I mean, they're getting very insulting. And from that, you could easily imagine, you know, I mean, where would this all go? One last aggression, you know, the Ukrainian war, which, you know, what, like 430 days ago when it started, we discussed and predicted that it was just going to go on and on because it really wasn't a real war. It was just depopulation. Man, that's one prediction we got right. Mm-hmm. It's just been, I mean, the numbers are not known. No one really knows how many bodies have been laid up with, you know, in the Ukrainian side, but it has to be just through the roof. So that's, you know, we're actually witnessing real time an evaporation of a European nation. And it's, again, it's a revelation. You know, everything that was told us about the war is a lie. So I'm hoping that, you know, the skepticism that comes to the, you know, that even the kind of the people who are waking up a little bit, to use an expression, like going, maybe reality's not exactly like these guys are telling me. All of these revelations, you know, the vaccine, COVID, the lockdown, the Ukrainian war, the financial system, hopefully that they will start to then apply that skepticism to their own physical circumstance and go, you know, maybe I should look into what I'm eating. You know, because that might not be good for me.
Yeah, it's, well, you make war on the working class and sort of the industrial manufacturing centers of the country, you know, flyover country, Bible Belt, whatever. These are the people that usually fill the ranks of the recruit, you know, the recruiting of the army. And you, of course, you insult it, and then you destroy it, and then you flood them with fentanyl. You wonder why you're, and it, at the same time, you go woke and you just start promoting all these perverse agendas. They wonder why recruitment is only like meeting just over 60%. You know, then you start a war. You know, right. That you don't have the capacity to win because you can just bluff and sanction your way to victory, I suppose. But yeah, there you have it. That's the sort of the sclerotic, sick, deranged leadership we're given. Let's look at our political leadership.
Yeah, and then of course the financial system. I mean, it's really accelerating the de-dollarization process. You know,
well, the sanction process does that. They weaponize the dollar. One of our people don't have dollars anymore. Yeah. They stole $300 billion in Russian reserves. I mean, they didn't even do that in World War II, with Germany. Germany's foreign reserves left untouched during the height of the Second World War.
Right. Well, I know. So the neocon plan, as they presented it, was to, you know, sanctions and then steal the money so that Russia would be economically paralyzed. They had built up a 650,000 man army in Ukraine, given it all these fancy weapons. They knew that they would be able to defeat Russia. And at least for a period of time, and during that time, they would probably, you know, have this fantasy about a color revolution in Russia, right? And mm-hmm. then replace Putin with, you know, a Victoria Nuland's candidate. Well, it didn't happen. And what has occurred, it's just been an incredible, you know, I mean, I think to me, the whole thing seems, it's just so far-fetched. It just has to be theatrical.
President Putin should travel to Germany and tell Biden to tear down the wall.
You know, one thing I was thinking about how artificial the war with Ukraine is, because here's one thing it's not mentioned often that kind of puzzles me.
When the Warsaw Pact dissolved, why not NATO?
Yeah, for sure. is that, you know, the only place, the only country that this particular configuration of battle could exist is with the Ukraine. Because you couldn't do this in any other nation, because all of them along the border and inside Europe, they're all part of NATO. And so this would, you know, axiomatically, you know, produce nuclear war, right? Mm-hmm. But the one country that you can have your long-term munitions-type warfare is the one country that was built up with the army inside it to, you know, attack Russia.
Yes.
Man, this just seems far-fetched to me. I mean, of course, you know, the Ukraine does have the Donbass with the, you know, the issue with the Russian-speaking individuals. But that was well dealt with by the Minsk agreement. I mean, you know, we could have, for example, got Poland to be, you know, angry with Russia and use the Polish army for this adventure. But that would have been, you know, it evoked the NATO's nuclear principle. And so you just couldn't. But my point is, it just strikes me as artificial, you know, that a war that can't end with, led by Zelensky, who, you know, and just on if you just take him at face value, is completely insane. He's sort of almost like a Churchillian figure or Hitlerian, you know, where it's total war. And I don't care how many, you know, the nation, if we die, we die. We're just going to go down with blood on our hands. You know, this is just, it just strikes me as artificial. And it just is very, very troubling to me. I suffer with this because I just feel that the Ukrainians have this sophistry, you know, that is the political structure above them. And that somehow enables you know, a rebellion not to take place, you know, where that's really what they need. The only hope the Ukrainian people have now is to find a way to get rid of Zelensky and put in some real Ukrainian leadership.
Yeah, instead of, you know, Jews installed by a Jewish-controlled U.S. State Department, is what Ukraine is. You know.
That doesn't work out historically very well.
No. So, well, speaking of the hero of the right, conservative Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, he made a trip to Israel to sign a law, this HB 269, that makes it a felony with up to 5 years in jail for passing out, quote, offensive flyers or pamphlets. What's offensive? The move has been widely criticized by free speech advocates and legal experts as a gross violation of the First Amendment. The bill states that anyone distributing any material for the purposes of intimidating or threatening the owner could be convicted of a felony or hate crime. This is, again, hate speech, I guess. This legislation came about after an activist for a group called the Goyim Defense League. Yeah. Apparently, they've been passing out flyers. I guess, point out some uncomfortable truths about the individuals who control the mainstream media and what tribe they belong to. But nevertheless, they're just flyers and they urge no violence or anything. The flyers even have a statement on them noting that they are distributing randomly without malicious intent. So this is well within the First Amendment. This isn't violent behavior, or just obviously well within the Brandenburg standard of the Supreme Court rulings regarding free speech, well within that. There isn't even a vague reference to violence. But this is the second time DeSantis has flown to Israel to sign a law. The other one was, I believe, HB 741, Combating Public Disorder Bill, where it was in 2019. He went to Jerusalem to sign this law. And this law, I think, codified the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism, which is a certain perception of Jews which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Again, very vague. This banned basically criticism of Jews, like in colleges, criticism of Israel, skepticism towards the Holocaust narrative and these things. So here we go. This is beyond pandering. I know politicians have to pander, politicians being politicians and acknowledging the existence of powerful groups like the Jews. But this seems to be taking it too far. And I think he's really hurt himself here.
Well, hopefully. Because it's just disgusting. I mean, the idea of signing a piece of state legislature in another nation? Are you kidding me? I mean, wait a second. Did they elect you? Can we see the ballots? I mean, what the heck? So it is propaganda in which the act of signing in Israel is supposed to emphasize the intimidation, which is really what the law is supposed to do, right? That's all it is. Just amplified intimidation. Because I tried to get the pamphlets that the Goyim Defense League came up with, and I've only got descriptions of them, so I don't really know. But from the descriptions, it just seems like they were basically pointing out the numbers of people, and they were naming names and giving percentages of who controls the media. And they were all Jews, I guess, right?
Yes, they were. Yeah.
So the thing is that, my point is that if in fact the actual statements, right, the assertions cannot be contested as being objectively correct, then how is it possible to shoehorn the First Amendment away from being able to defend them? You see what mm-hmm. I mean? And rather than go at the numbers, right, they create this intimidation phenomena, which ends up with DeSantis flying to Israel and having all these headlines about it and stuff.
Isn't he proving the Goyim Defense League's points?
Of course. I mean, this is the thing. It's diminishing returns. To me, this is just clear cut. Because what this will do is of course, the people who succumb to this propaganda, they're gone. They're not going. Who cares? Their mind is gone. So they will believe it, and they'll just go on to, you know, the Jerry Springer's wake, you know, to mourn. You know, who cares? They're just gone. But the people on the cusp, the people who are awakening, the people who are becoming skeptical, they are so much more likely to go, you know, I really should, like, what are the assertions in the Goyim Defense League's pamphlets? And then just, I'm sure they're available somewhere in the independent media. And then just check the citations. I mean, because the intimidation is starting to fall apart, they're trying to amplify it in different ways to make it hold us in check. But when they do something this hand-handed, I think it's diminishing returns. I think they're going to lose more people will come into the light and start actually questioning, the correctness of the assertions than are just going to, like, you know, walk out and say, you know, I'm never going to say anything, you know, even possibly, that can be taken as anti-Semitic or, you know, anti-Black or anything like that. You know, I just think that the people, no one is really, this isn't going to change anything. The people succumb to this propaganda, okay, they're already, you know, in the corral. But the people who are on the cusp, the people who are in transition, this is just going to accelerate that. And there's going to be more people looking at these things than before because of the stupid publicity stunt.
Yeah, this also goes to show that how politicians are working with the organized Jewish community, the Jewish elite, these organizations, to destroy the First Amendment. And if you destroy that, but it's pretty much all America really is, you know, the law, this idea of free speech and how they're using that, their power in the media and also the power of intimidation through organizations like the ADL to force politicians to actually, sign laws that are in violation of their oaths of office. They also go against the spirit of America, which is free speech. And they're openly now in violation and contempt of that. You see that. There's with the internet, there's Jewish organizations that are suing Google, which is a Jewish operation. I think this is to a challenge to Section 230, meaning that these social media sites or platforms are not completely immunized from lawsuits, from violence that may occur because of something said provocative on these websites. And then again, by amending or affecting section 230 of the Communication Decency Act, they're going to again further suppress free speech on the internet far beyond what they're already doing. Just supposedly through terms of service, right? Where the ADL installs more or less political commissars at Google. Easy said, because Google's Jewish run. Yeah. And of course, we've talked, and other people exposed this, the prominent role that Israel's Unit 8200 play in installing agents throughout these tech companies, social media companies, communication companies. And so the control is all throughout, and they've kind of this, Jewish organizations, Jewish power has sort of extended their tentacles or the tendrils into all these systems. And how to uproot them, I don't know. But when they come out and they openly come out and violate in support of censorship, deplatforming, intimidation, and also passing laws and proposing criminal laws against things like free speech or criticism of certain things or certain historical narratives, they're now the professed enemy of America, because that's all really what America is, you know.
Right. Well, to your point of how do you stop them? Well, exposure. You know, mm-hmm. you have to point out, just like the Goyim Defense League, I mean, that they have an extraordinary percentage of the power, and that they have deliberately gone out of the way to achieve that stature, and that they're using it in general, I would say, against the First Amendment. And so that, you know, kind of simple train of thought is what has to be given to the public so they can become aware of it. We'll probably talk about Tucker Carlson later. And, you know, my assertion is that, well, there's a strong possibility that he's what I call a lifetime actor. But, you know, to create one of these guys, you have to give the public exactly what they need to hear. In other words, a better example would be like Robert Malone. If he's a lifetime actor, what they're trying to do is to capture the reaction. They put out the vaccine. They know there's going to be a huge response to it. So they have to get ahead of that and create the critics of the vaccine, you know, ahead of time, so that they will be there to receive the public and to steer them into the right cul-de-sac once this organization and this response, you know, to what they've done starts to manifest. So this is a process that happens over and over again. And we have to, show that what they are really doing is trying to end the First Amendment in just little strips. You know, you're walking down this path, and we have to be really careful about who we give our trust to in this process, you know, because there are a lot of people in the vaccine kind of, resistance who are now questioning Malone, you know, and so what I'm a little worried about is that Tucker now will come into the independent media as a colossus, right? I mean, certainly he'll have the largest, community immediately, right? I forget what number it was, but I believe it was like 40 million people listened to the one statement he's made, which, you know, he went into the internet and created a statement and that was thing. So this is, he will be in a leadership position, and it's at a time, a critical time, you know, where you need honest leaders to try to really expose why and who is doing this. See, like if you look at the vaccine, the lifetime actors that are involved in controlling it, well, they'll go to extraordinary lengths to explain how bad the vax is and how dangerous it is. But the thing they don't do is take the next step to say, well, who did this? And like in the case of Malone, he just talks about the deep state, whatever that is, right? They take you into a cul-de-sac, which stops you from going further in your analysis to try to really determine who is doing this and why. And in the destruction of the First Amendment, you know, you have to, you know, you have to worry about what categories they will give us as to who the enemies are. And so it's going to be interesting to see how if Carlson comes into the independent media, which I presume he's going to shortly, how he actually handles the critical question, which is who exactly is doing this. We can see more or less clearly that it's being done. I mean, certainly you can see the transgender movement has been artificially created. You can see this, the attack on the First Amendment, right? I mean, where does this come from? So you can't just stop thinking when you get to the point of oligarchs or, you know, some kind of, you know, euphemism. You have to continue your thought process to really get down into the actual details of who's doing it. And that's why, like a few shows ago, you produced that extraordinary list of all of the Jewish agencies and organizations that were involved in transgender promotion. And it was really useful because that's something just even in the independent media, it's just really not done very often. And it's so clarifying. You know, you get an idea of really not just who's doing it, but why. You see, if all of those data points are correct, then you get this really clear understanding of the world from which you can respond. You can't just end up with, you know, well, it's the deep state, you know, or the military industrial or some, you know, vague bureaucracy. You really have to go all the way to the individuals who are doing it, and then you can get it motivation. And so we'll see with Tucker, if he's going to take us through the process, right, to the actual individuals and motivation, or if he's actually just going to create a cul-de-sac, you know, where hatred of, deep state or entrenched bureaucracies any of these expressions which really don't take you down the path of analysis to identification and motivation. Tim, did I lose you? Sorry.
I'm sorry. Tucker Carlson, arguably the brightest star in the cable news firmament, found out, there was Monday, right? Yeah, this past Monday that he, the official story is that they agreed to part ways. It was mutual. Now, I don't know if anyone believes that. His show, of course, ran for almost 7 years, 2016 to 2023. He had the highest rated show, I think averaging sometimes as many as 5 million viewers, perhaps many 10 times that would eventually see material on things like YouTube. So very influential. And unlike most cable news hosts or news anchors, the show was actually informative and thought-provoking. Some say that it was Rupert Murdoch himself who ordered the firing. Some say it was Murdoch's son, or the CEO, Suzanne Scott, who apparently is a sort of a humorless affirmative action hire there at News Corp. There still is no official replacement for this time slot, although rumor has it that it's Caitlyn Jenner.
So, well, another legitimate conservative voice. So
Republican drag queens are so much prettier, according to Donald Trump's son, right? Some say the fall, his purging ouster, was a result of the Dominion voting system lawsuit that had been settled for just under $800 million. An odd thing, it seems to be that Fox News could have eventually won that dispute. It was kind of a absurd claim. They said that certain opinions expressed in Fox News regarding the integrity of Dominion voting systems operations or software was defamation, and they pulled out some emails or some texting which seemed to express to some people on Fox who didn't think there were any problems. I don't know how legal that made any difference. Nevertheless, there was a lawsuit. This is an example of lawfare, I think, of the abuse of the judicial system, how when the courts become highly politicized, which they have. I mean, the New York Times was caught defaming Sarah Palin and still prevailed. And not to mention all the other fake news, like the weapons of mass destruction, Russiagate, and these things, to pull somehow to make Fox News an example of this is ridiculous. I don't think the Dominion thing's ever really been resolved. I understand there are problems with it, that it is hackable, that the Dominion machines were accessible via the internet. I don't know if that actually played a big part in the debacle of the 2020 election. I think mail-in voting was the lion's share of the problem there. And so this is kind of a misdirection. Nevertheless, and also the idea that somehow that there are problems with the 2020 election were somehow just like baseless conspiracy theories, even though I think as many as 22 attorneys general sued for the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court refused to hear that, even though the Supreme Court's primary job is to solve disputes between the states. The 22 states, I think, it sued saying that the illegal changing of voting laws, the mail-in voting during COVID, was a violation of the Constitution, which it was on its face, but the Supreme Court said we don't want to hear it. Nevertheless, there's this lawsuit, was Amy Grossberg, who claims that she was a victim of sexual harassment or intimidation, hostile work environment, whatever that means. This goes back to the stupid civil rights laws we're talking about, where there's no real clear description of what it means, meaning that it's just sort of endless litigation and also lawful. I just want to
stop you. What actually is she accusing him of? Because I couldn't find
anti-Semitism, of course.
I couldn't figure out, well, what is it? I mean, did he...
Anti-Semitism. They had Christmas lights in the office.
What did he say? You know, I'm just trying to get, are there any asserted facts?
Misogyny. Guilty of misogyny because they had, because they told jokes about female politicians as if female politicians aren't rich targets for derision and fun these days.
Yeah, like, right.
Like Sandy Cortez, or come on. Man, nevertheless, this creates a hostile work environment. Although she knew going into what she was getting herself into, she actually sought out employment. I saw her on an interview saying that she was shocked that Tucker Carlson actually thinks this way. It isn't just an act. Well, that's some funny criticism. Although she never met him, by the way, she was up in New York. Tucker Carlson's in Florida. But anyway, this is just again, these lawsuits are just, it's a form of lawfare. Then you have that idiot Ray Epps on 60 Minutes claiming that Tucker Carlson was obsessed with him because Tucker Carlson suggested that he may have been a Fed or a plant as if this is some sort of wild conspiracy theory that the FBI would foment a riot or a kidnapping case or something, right? The FBI would never do anything like that, right? Although Ray Epps is, he's on tape actually urging people on to go into the Capitol.
and the insults were just playing videos of him urging people to storm the Capitol, right? I mean, it was just that was just hilarious.
All Tucker Carlson said was, who is Ray Epps? That's the question. Yeah. And the FBI isn't forthcoming. They say they can't be forthcoming with all the assets or confidential informants they had at the Capitol that day. I think they count. I mean, just in the Proud Boys case, I think as many as 40 confidential informants for 6 or 7 defendants. So I don't think that played in the fact. I think what happened was that Tucker controlled opposition. What do you mean by that? Meaning he only goes so far. He knows he's on a short leash. He can talk so much, or if he's, you know, if it's malicious or something, is that at some point along the line, he became a liability for the powers that be. It's interesting, if you look at it, the lawsuit between Dominion and Fox News, it turns out that just before the settlement, BlackRock, who owns large shares of stock in Dominion and News Corp, apparently increased their holdings in Fox News just before the settlement was announced. So basically, through interlocking directors, this is how these conglomerates operate, is they all own each other. So it's like they're suing each other at a meta level. Again, it's what's the cause of his firing? I think just the substance of his show rubbed people the wrong way. He exposed the fraud of the Ukraine, the corruption. He talked about January 6th was a big thing when he exposed the lie of January 6th. And you have Chuckie Schumer, yeah. I mean, actually threatening, a politician threatening to take him down. The Miss Grossberg, I think, suggests there might have been an ADL operation against him, meaning that she was sent there as an agent to do just what she's done. And of course, she's actually admitted to contradicting herself in the lawsuit. She claimed that she was intimidated to lie under oath about some of the details. Now she's reversing her sworn testimony, which seems to me is, well, once you already admitted to lying, why should we believe that you were lying the first time? Maybe right. You're lying now, you know?
Well, to Tucker's credit and to make the case that he's legitimate, evidence would be that he is transitioning. And this
what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, not sexually, but
His consciousness is being raised. He's learning, and he's admitted that in so many interviews, by the way.
Exactly.
He said that. In defense of himself.
How he was approaching, he was getting pretty spicy.
Yes.
You know,
and he mentioned he mentioned Building 6 in an interview.
Yeah. So you have to wonder, you know, if you are the oligarchs and you see this transition, to use an expression, you have to not just be concerned with where he is at point now, but at point future, because if he's making this motion, you know, movement along this transition, he could end up on our show.
who among us hasn't gone through this?
Well, that's right. Exactly.
I'm not saying he has. I'm just saying it explains some of the apparent contradictions in his life, like his background, his pedigree. But people people who grow up in the Beltway area, the intelligence community, they grow up in this. It's a whole lifestyle. It's a worldview, and maybe certain events have transpired that he's undergoing with our paradigm shift, and you're seeing it before your eyes. Now, it could be all an act. I understand that, but here's a quote, and we can talk about, you know, he says, the media are not here to inform you, really, even on the big things that really matter, like the economy, wars, COVID. Their job is not to inform you. They are working for a small group of people who actually run the world. They are their servants, and we should treat them with the maximum contempt because they have earned it. Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, and he's right. But my problem is the idea of a small group of people.
Who's that group?
Expression is a cul-de-sac. You need to, the next step, if Carlson is legit, is he has to go, you know what, guys? Let's find out who this small group is and name some names and try to understand motivation here, because otherwise he's just a smiling face with a bow tie. I guess he doesn't wear the bow tie anymore, but he will keep us in a cul-de-sac, and our energy and our trust go to him. And we think, well, he's leading us, but in fact, he's stalling us. So, but I don't know. I mean,
don't trust him. Just see what he reports.
I don't trust him. Of course not, but we'll just see where he goes with all this. Yeah. He gave a speech, and I believe it's a religious kind of structure organization. I think it was the Heritage Organization, perhaps.
Well, the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative think tank founded in 1973. It was the 50th anniversary.
He went pro-Christian. In the speech, he really started talking about, at least the one that I'm referring to, which occurred just a week before he was fired.
Mm-hmm.
He really started talking about kind of the need for Christianity inside the culture. And I thought, well, that's interesting. You know,
he told people to pray.
Yeah. Now that's interesting. He's transitioning along a spectrum. He's moving from point zero, where his father is the head of Radio Free America.
I mean, he is handicapped. He's born into an Episcopalian family.
Right. I made that joke. That's funny.
Yeah.
But he, you know, you start out with your dad as head of Radio Free America. That's just about as controlled an operation.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. This is, I have personal direct experience with people like this.
Good.
Is that during the Cold War, these were true believers. These were spearheaders for the empire. And they were on the good side. The communists were the bad side. And it wasn't quite clear to many, you know, just what was really going on. And so during the 80s and 90s, you could see how, okay, you can believe in the system. And in Tucker's defense, he's openly talked about how he came from this world. He's finding out that it's all based on lies and corruption. Now, I think now just look from a human perspective. Now, he's got a lot at stake, right? He's got family and he's got money and prestige. And that's a lot to put on, to put at risk. If you have very little, like me, it's very little is at risk.
well, just remember this, that yes, his income is at risk, but he has $120 million in the bank. So
yes,
it's not like he is without resources or needs a job. So it's actually what is happening in some ways very natural. In other words, if he is legitimately transitioning, of course they're going to have to fire him now, or even, you know, seeing where he's going to end up in a few months or year, whatever, but he cannot stay inside of Fox News if he actually is legitimate.
No, it was. I think he said it was inevitable that he'd be destroyed.
Right. So therefore,
he said that. They'll crush. Now, what does crushing mean? I mean, unemployment with sitting on $100 million in the bank. That's not really being crushed, but he can effectively be neutralized. And you know, maybe that's enough for the system. But if you look at Fox News and News Corp, and the Murdochs and their ties to Zionists, it's a Jewish operation. And so to what extent he was hired, meaning that he would lead people in that cul-de-sac and never say the word Jew.
Anyway, right? So now we will see, because yes, if he's free now and there is a legitimate transition, an intellectual transition occurring, now that he is free, the identity of the small group of people running the world, right, will become a focus of his shows. And he'll start saying, okay, we can see the evil, we can see malevolence is afoot, all of the things I've been talking about. Let's go after identity, and then let's go after motivation. If he just goes into, kind of preaching more and more, and you just start seeing more and more, it's like the small group of people that we have to, organize against. I mean, you'll at that point, I'll start to, identify him as just a lifetime actor.
Yeah.
But if he continues this intellectual process, look out, because this would be, it'd just be an extraordinary moment. He really is interesting, isn't he, Tim? Because if he is legit, he could do more to seismic eruption of like the structure of propaganda that people live under, right? Mm-hmm. He has the opportunity. He has a bully pulpit that's just amazing. And, I've sent him emails and things encouraging him with some information. I have, what I think is his email address, but I don't know if it even works. He's never gotten back to me. But on the other hand, I send emails to them all. And no one has ever, this is one thing I'll say about the mainstream media. They're very consistent. No one will ever say anything back to me, no matter how often. It's sort of like my politician. I'm constantly writing emails to the Congress. But, I don't know why I do this. No one has ever, ever given me anything back other than a form, thank you for your interest in national defense. I mean, it's just no one has ever even responded. But I keep trying because, I just feel I should. But anyway.
Well, like I said, people like Tucker, even Trump, they have all the right enemies. So you sort of reflexively want to defend them.
Yeah.
Even though they're far from perfect. Yes, that sort of thing. It's just one of these things. They have all the right, But again, his show at the very least was you saw things that you or heard things that you'd never hear or see on any other program, which is why it was killing it in the ratings. And they didn't.
Oh, yeah.
And he was provoking. He would, even if he didn't agree with them, he would dog whistle issues and he would provoke thought in the viewers. And that's something that they can't have. They want a lobotomized, dumb consumers watching the news, and they didn't want that. The idea that we live in a society where, the free market of ideas and the best products and the best ideas win. No, obviously that's not the case, because if that were the case, Tucker Carlson was to have a show. Because there was, from a standpoint of rating. Now, here's the thing. This gets in the whole finances, is News Corp and Fox News and who actually owns it and what's their financial situation. Obviously, the Tucker Carlson show was blackballed by corporations. So he had to sell MyPillow. He was still killing it. Subscription services really made up for a lot of this. So even though they'll put on some crappy show in that time slot, they'll get corporate funding for it. It is interesting to show. If you watched, I think it was his final show, and he did that thing about big pharma and pushing drugs, equating in that any news corporation or network that would not only harm the public by pushing drugs is Pablo Escobar level evil.
Yeah.
And implying that even Fox News, and if you see when he's talking, his voice, I don't know, maybe it's teleprompter that he's reading, but his voice is stressed. And you see a lot of stress and expressing. Maybe he's cutting his own throat when he's saying this.
Right. And the other possibility is that it's theatrical.
That's true too.
It's just like the possibility that they created that exact.
It could be acting. I mean, Marlon Brando was very convincing in the roles that he played. It's method acting, right? That could be the case too.
That's right. And incidentally, I mean, again, they can't create lifetime actors without giving us some reason to have trust in them. And during that process, the building of trust, you can get just really important information and you could actually make some movement. So we'll just see what Tucker has.
Well, like I said, it's like E. Michael Jones said this in regards to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., another imperfect, you know, person who's running for office, but there's substance there. And that's itself is redeeming. I was a very flawed person. His politics isn't perfect in my book, but the COVID thing and the shots created a portal for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. where he's seeing all this other things. And now even skepticism towards environmentalism he's expressing now, it's being co-opted by the World Economic Forum. So he's showing sophistication in these other issues where in the past he was kind of hysterical. So these are portals towards the truth where we see this one issue and it opens up a whole vista and we see,
absolutely, it all. Absolutely. You know, so. I want to like just point out that I am in favor of RFK Jr.'s candidacy, and at present time I will vote for him. And I will vote for him over Ron DeSantis because I am concerned that DeSantis would arrange to have the inauguration in Jerusalem. And I just feel that would be like bad optics. Okay. But I wanted to just digress for just a second, because this talk about lifetime actors has I have a notification for people who listen to the show that I've written an article called "The Freemason Invention of the Nazi Party," and it's not a paywall; it's for free. You just go to postflaviana.com and you just type in postflaviana and Joe Atwell or Joseph Atwell, and the page will come up with the article. You can click on it. Now I'm not touting my horn here. I think people will find the article interesting. It has a lot more details than kind of show 45. I kind of gave this theory I have on the relationship between British Freemasonry and Nazi Party. So the article has really fleshed it all out, so people can just see it and make of it what they will. But my point is that it's sort of timely in many ways. But one of them is that you can really see how the character under my theory of Adolf Hitler was so carefully created, and how the things that he was going to be reacting to and then controlling in the process, you know, leading up to his power and then immediately thereafter, were really well thought out. And so when you look at Tucker through that lens, I do think it's useful. I mean, in other words, I think
it's a very invidious comparison.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry to say. But the thing is that
Hitler never wore a bow tie.
Right. Well, the thing is that, I mean,
Lederhosen.
He wore Lederhosen. Tucker is going to take us to war, but I do think that he has this moment where what I'm predicting is that Tucker will become a huge part of the independent media. And thank heavens, because Joe Rogan is, he's a simpleton. I mean, sweet, but, you know, he's not going to take us anywhere analytically.
He'll tell you to get high or something.
Exactly. You don't use F-bombs and stuff. So it's just ridiculous. But Tucker is very smart. And if he continues transition, he could just do a world of good for the defense of the First Amendment and for moving the American public into identifying who the small group of people who run the world and what their motivation is, or he can turn us, into the cul-de-sac. So we'll see. It's going to be one or the other.
Yeah. So I still think you should say evolve rather than transition, because these days.
Okay. You're right. But they'll just take that word.
Used to be a fine word. It's like gay.
It was a
right?
fine word. Yeah. It meant something.
It's like gay and the rainbow. They've ruined.
Yeah, gosh, what an artificial, social program. I mean, it just comes out of nowhere. They have all these laws in back of it. You just have to hope that the urgency that they're trying to institute these socially destructive and socially controlled, the lockdown and vaccine mandates, that we really are in a wholesome era of diminishing returns, and you're just going to start getting more and more of the people on the fence.
Well, you saw that Claremont study, $82 billion in the past few years has been transferred to Black Lives Matter and other associated leftists.
It's so extraordinary. You know, when you see that and you go, $88 billion for Black Lives Matter. And I was thinking, all of kind of like the Gentile organizations, like the Elks, I don't know, YMCA, do you think any of them have $88 billion?
Well, this is, I mean, this isn't anything new. If you read that book, Foundations and Their Power, written in the 1950s, yeah, about the, about the committee hearings of the 1950s into the foundations, and the role that these foundations played in social change and how sort of this was undermining self-government. They would fund research and media and decide who got appointed where and how and these sort of things. And they have their agents throughout the media. This is what the Council of Foreign Relations is about. This is what World Economic Forum is about. This is what Bilderberg is about, all these steering committees and coordinating policy boards and all this stuff. Yep. So it's kind of laid bare for all to see now. If you just want to connect the dots, it's all there. But the idea, and there's an interesting, you wonder why something like, I was listening to John Rappaport had a discussion on this on his podcast, and he was talking about Dylan Mulvaney, the Bud Light, you know, presenter or promoter.
Yeah, right.
And people are wondering, why would Bud Light hire this so-called transgendered person or whatever
he increase is, sales
to boost sales of Bud Light? It's a complete slap in the face to the to their customer base. Why would they do this? Well, he kind of laid it out. This Claremont Institute study about the $82 billion, kind of a war chest for woke or leftist activism, how the corporations are behind this. Of course, this is all part of BlackRock and ESG, environmental social governance, where these corporations have decided to push the woke agenda, the leftist agenda, the environmental agenda, sort of the degenerate sexual perversion agenda, the Pritzkers and these families, these billionaire families, as a part of a business model, if you will, to sort of revamp or reset the global order. But he's saying what happens is that a corporation, you know, like Bud Light, will get a visit from the Human Rights Campaign Fund, and they'll say, hey, you should do this. Ordinarily, why would they do this? Well, it turns out the Human Rights Campaign Fund has a $1 trillion backer in the form of BlackRock. And if you don't do what the Human Rights Campaign Fund wants, meaning promote a transgender spokesperson for your product, you'll have all types of problems. One thing is not just protesting like the Jesse Jackson Rainbow Push model for extortion. This comes in the form of your market capital being attacked, meaning that you will not get investment funds. They will direct money away from your company, and you will lose market capital value, and your stock will suffer. Maybe they'll wage a hostile takeover of your company and you know, replace the board. And this is what Larry Fink does with BlackRock. It's Vanguard, State Street, and BlackRock. They owe like they control like $27 trillion in assets, and they're effectively becoming a governing body by manipulating scenes, these things behind, behind the curtain, using their financial leverage to bring about social change. And this is something that's, it's an important issue because they're engaged in fundamental change, not only of the economy, but also laws. There is a, I think it was Kansas that recently just overrode the governor's veto, 80-40, about transgender, you know, protecting women's sports. 80-40, the governor vetoed it. Well, all it says is that, basically your biological sex determines your sex, which is just common sense. It's almost like writing a law saying that a dog is a dog and 2 + 2 = 4. But if BlackRock says it's 5, you better damn well say it's 5, or else they'll attack your economy. And the governor's reason for vetoing the law wasn't so much ideological, trans rights, trans women are women, blah, blah, blah. She said that vetoing the bill was good for business. Why would that be good for business? Why is that a business decision? Because the corporations that are owned by BlackRock, that own News Corp, that own Dominion Voting, that own everything, are pushing this agenda. And it's right. A governance issue that we have to address that goes back, this basically oligarchy has pretty much, they've created a system where they're the governing bodies and the governments that we elect, the civics lessons we're given about what we elect and the way the courts respond to these things, those bodies are not sovereign. the corporations are solvent and they have no accountability to the public, as we see, you know, because not many people know who Larry Fink is. They know who Joe Biden is, but Joe Biden's an empty suit and an empty head.
Right. And we can clearly state that BlackRock would be in the rubric of the small group of people who control the world.
A cabal, if you will.
Yeah. So yes. Here would be a great test case for Tucker. Who are they and what is the motivation?
And their passion for social change, their passion for Tikkun Olam,
and
speaks to their ethnic identity, doesn't it?
There you go. So if you start walking down the analytic path, trying to understand the data and looking at the data clearly, which would include the identities, right? Who are these small group of people who run the world? Well, with BlackRock, you have Fink and you have others, right? But you could create the list, and then you could, once you had that, you would be able to then start to analyze motivation.
Yeah, another thing, good example is a while back, Fox News, I don't know if it was Tucker, but they were talking about what's all the woke stuff going on at various monument sites, you know, like Monticello, and how they're all pushing critical race theory and sort of agitation with slavery. If you go visit Thomas Jefferson's home, they have very prominent displays of slavery, calling out Jefferson for being evil because he owned slaves. And sort of this, again, sort of this critical deconstructionist approach to American history, basically promoting white guilt and black agitation. And why are they doing this now? The new board that's, of course, if you look at the board of Monticello, it's Jews. And of course, the improvements that have been paid for, that have been done to these various sites throughout the years at Monticello have been heavily paid for by one David Rubenstein, who runs the Carlyle Group, another Jew.
And you see, if you walk down this path analytically, just creating data points, you know, which are just normal kind of process to understand, you know, the phenomena, you would end up with, you know, the motivation would become self-evident. And then the public, if they make the journey, they'll have the capacity to defend themselves.
Yeah.
If they know identity and from that they can deduce motivation, then when you look at what they've done to Monticello, it doesn't damage your mind, at least. You know you've been attacked. You know this is a particular kind of racial attack. You know that it's the authoritarian personality coming at you. Even your historical, you know, background is being attacked. It's critical historical theory, which, you know, and just attack everything that's Christian or European is bad and evil. And if you knew that and you knew the identity and the motivation, then you are automatically defended, because the truth, you see what I mean? The truth, just the simple, honest facts lead to the question of motivation. And from there, the propaganda cannot damage you. It's because you're too skeptical. In fact, it's just the other way around. When you see crap like that, your reaction is anger and wanting to do something about it, wanting to create a little bit of political power for your own, so that maybe we could have an organization that would go to the historical revisionism that's going on in Monticello and say, you know, this is crap, and you're a sophist, you're just lying, and you're just trying to destroy European understanding of our history and our traditions. Mm-hmm. You could be honest if you understand the data, you know. So this is it's really another interesting moment. You know, so what do you think, Tim? When will Tucker, you know, make his move here to become king of the independent media?
I don't know. It depends on, does he have an agreement with Fox? I know he's
a couple deals have been floated.
He's still in under contract with them, if I understand. He just doesn't have a show. So there might be I would have to assume there's a certain amount of time where he can't be hired by anybody else, but he can certainly do a lot of interviews.
Well, you can do independent media just under First Amendment. They can't be stopped.
Yeah.
You could do that. I think something will come out pretty quickly. I saw an interview with him physically, and he was in a golf cart with his wife, and they were talking about what are your future plans? And he said, well, I'm looking forward to the aperitif and the entree. So he was just treating it lightly, but this is actually going to be quite the event. I really do think, if nothing else, it'll be the most, it'll really, it's, this could be a kind of watershed for independent media, because if he actually continues to evolve, if he continues to evolve, he could end up, you know, with just dramatic effects. And if he's going to go cul-de-sac, he can do a lot of damage, but I think he'll be exposed pretty quickly because there's just too many skeptics in the independent media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, well, like I said, let 100,000 flowers bloom.
Too many absolutely.
To yeah. Cut down.
Well, and, Tucker, you know, I mean,
the idea is, add him to the list. If he provides meaningful, you know, useful material, you know, use it, consume it, spread it around. But obviously, the future doesn't depend on him alone. And that's not his burden anyway, and nor do you want it to be, because you don't want to create a single target for those.
You'll know that Tucker is legit when the first guest that he has on is Tim Kelly.
Oh, don't want to make me a target.
Well, how about E. Michael Jones?
There you go. Oh, that would, yeah.
There would be a fun talk. I mean, that would, we'll see how that went.
So, okay.
All right, Tim, thank you so much, brother. We'll get you next week.
Good night. Bye-bye.